I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, for decades, doctors have warned their patients to watch their cholesterol, but now they're beginning to issue those warnings to their younger patients as well. Leading U.S. heart experts say the effort to prevent heart disease may need to begin earlier in life and be tailored more closely to each patient's risk. Cardiologists behind the update say the goal is to prevent more heart disease before it starts. Cardiovascular disease remains the leading cause of death, but experts say much of it is preventable, and the key to that is targeting cholesterol. So, what are these new guidelines, and how can they be adapted to individual patients? What questions do you have about getting cholesterol under control? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Heart disease remains the leading cause of death in the United States, and one of the biggest drivers of that is often cholesterol. New guidelines from the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association and several other major medical groups are putting renewed focus on how doctors and patients manage cholesterol, not just after a heart attack or stroke, but years earlier. The message is that prevention needs to start sooner. The goal is not just to treat cholesterol numbers today, but to reduce the odds of a heart attack 10, 20, or even 30 years down the road. Joining us to explain these new guidelines and what they mean is Dr. Robert Chilton. He is a clinical professor of medicine and interventional cardiologist at UT Health San Antonio, where he serves as director of the Cardiac Catheterization Laboratory. He specializes in lipidology and is board certified in cardiovascular disease and electrophysiology. And Dr. Chilton, welcome to The Source. Great to have you.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here.
Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or comment about cholesterol and trying to keep that heart attack away, we want to hear from you, your questions and comments. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. So, Dr. Chilton, what is cholesterol? Why is it such a boogeyman?
Well, cholesterol is actually one of the most important parts that, as far as something your body needs, but too much of it really does cause problems. But it doesn't act alone. Elevated cholesterol really is amplified by if you have high inflammatory state or where your body is not taking care of itself. And probably the most common thing that we see is people that the real most common is probably the dental. Inflammation will magnify whatever I comment on in the later part of this program in relation to cholesterol. Cholesterol, actually, most of us do not, you can't really affect the cholesterol levels that high by changing your diet. I give you 10 or 15%. And I think most people say, well, I'm going to just really straighten my diet out and go straight. It helps everything to stay in shape, to exercise, and to stay healthy with a proper BMI. And proper BMI, I guess, kind of depends on who's looking. But I think knowing your cholesterol does, since it does have genetic connections to how long you live in many respects, is important. And again, probably at the University of Texas at Southwestern, Brown and Goldstein actually got the Nobel Prize for LDL cholesterol and finding the receptors in the liver. Your liver makes most of your cholesterol, probably around 80% or so. So you can't really affect it. I can't affect how you take it out. But if you do have it in your blood, the liver should pull it out. The problem is there's 175 defects in cholesterol receptors on the liver. And so consequently, you cannot pull out everything every time. So all of us have a little problem with that, except special groups.
So you mentioned dental is key. So go back and tell me what that all means.
Yeah, what that means is that, you know, everybody wants just one thing. I could correct this and everything's better. It's not entirely. Cholesterol, along with blood pressure and other things, are risk factors for heart disease. The kind of the surprise was finding out many years ago that the if you have a high inflammatory state or you have high levels of oxidation in your body, maybe from fat cells, or is it because that you didn't get your teeth fixed, which produced more inflammation throughout your body? Your body is like it is a higher level of that. With that level being high inflammatory risk, you amplify all of the things like blood pressure problems, you amplify your cholesterol problems, and it makes it worse. If I was to take a animal cage, and I just fed the animals strictly cholesterol, but the cage is all clean, sterilized, and it's nice, you will not get much atherosclerosis. However, if I let that cage set in an inflammatory area where there's lots of bacteria and lots of things circulating, now the cholesterol that was present before that didn't cause trouble now will actually cause atherosclerosis. And that was a finding that we didn't expect many years ago at Stanford University. So inflammation is a big player. And as I kind of just tell everybody, I do procedures for hurt. But if you want to stay out of the operating room for that, make sure you stay healthy is the number one pill that you need to take. That means you have to have proper weight and you have to exercise. And now we move on to where we have cholesterol. And now that needs to be within range. So what would that range be to many people? They think they're probably okay, but they're really not. And in the past, they said, you know, if you lower your cholesterol just a certain percent, that would be good enough. I think we got a little bit more information now than we did.
So what about this idea? We've heard this quite a bit. Cholesterol leads to what, hardening of the arteries or the clogging of the arteries. And is that part true?
Well, in a sense, it is. Clogging of the arteries, to me, translates into prothrombosis, or more likely to clot your blood vessels. That relates to inflammation, but it also relates to elevated cholesterol. So they all make your blood start to thicken or become more damaging to the vessel wall. You don't want to do that. If you can exercise and keep your weight down, and you want your blood so it doesn't necessarily be more likely to clot, then you're certainly better off than somebody that would be having some infectious problem. So on the cholesterol side, you have more than just cholesterol here. This in itself alone is not going to, I can lower that number, but if I don't decrease your inflammation, then it's not a good deal. And so many of our trials we did with statins, I lowered cholesterol. But when we ran the numbers, we found out that we decreased the inflammatory markers more than we did the cholesterol. So then the hypothesis was, well, maybe it's the inflammation that's a problem. It's actually both. I don't have a specific anti-inflammatory other than ones that we currently use for actual cholesterol. It's not as simple as it looks. You would think, well, I just need to bring my cholesterol number down. It's more than a number. It's global risk reductions what you really want. You need to have the inflammation down, you need to be in shape, and you need to, again, control all the risk factors that we currently know. Inflammation is kind of a hidden one that people just, it doesn't recognize. Do we measure inflammation? We can measure it in the research setting. It's a little harder in private practice because in private practice, you don't have the research labs that are very accurate. You can make a lot of mistakes on hsCRP sometimes when you measure it, but it is being offered. And if it's high, that's not good for you.
So how do I know if I have high inflammation?
Well, you would actually measure this thing called hsCRP, and it's an inflammatory marker that circulates in your blood, and it gives you an idea if your blood vessels are kind of inflamed or you have a higher inflammatory state. You get an infection on your hand and it all turns red and you say, oh, that's inflammation. Well, you get the same thing on the inside of your blood vessels too if you don't take care of yourself and you have a high inflammatory state. So the cholesterol now comes zipping through your blood and it's high. It will then stick into the vessel. And now you heard, oh, my arteries are getting, they're harder. That's because the cholesterol goes inside the artery and makes that vessel stiffer, along with a lot of other physiologic changes. So they're all these are all interconnected. But the cholesterol is easy to measure. It's easy to explain to a patient, hey, you know, yeah, your cholesterol's high, I need to bring that down.
Well, if people go to a doctor,
if they
become aware of their cholesterol, uh-huh, how many people are walking around, they have no idea that they have high cholesterol. So I got to take a break here. Sure. We're going to be talking about that and more when we come back. The number to call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about new cholesterol guidelines and heart health. And we've just been listening to our guest, Dr. Robert Chilton, a clinical professor of medicine and interventional cardiologist at UT Health San Antonio, telling us it's not just cholesterol, it's not just a number, but these new guidelines definitely seem to be fixated on that number and about cholesterol and getting people to become aware of their cholesterol earlier in life before they have that first heart attack or stroke. And so you can call in with your questions and comments as we kind of work our way through this. The number is 833-877-8255 with your questions and comments. So do people tend to know what their state is? Are they cholesterol aware?
I think people are more cholesterol aware because of the American Heart Association. Inflammatory state, no, because we don't talk about that much. It's hard to put a pin that number down. But if you treat the LDL cholesterol with any kind of agents or whatever you do to bring it down, you do decrease your inflammatory state because cholesterol irritates the blood vessel too.
So is it a chicken or an egg kind of situation?
They're connected. They're not just one or the other. Everybody wants just one thing. It's just not one thing. A guy comes in, his cholesterol may be normal, but the guy's overweight or he looks pregnant. You got a problem. You know, and that's why I say it's not just one thing. If I had the magic pill to give everybody, I would put you at a normal BMI and have you exercise a couple of hours a day. You know, that's difficult to say, but it's like you don't want to change the oil in your car and you want to run it forever. It's going to clog up, you know, and to make a human run really well, you need to have it at the proper levels, and then it runs pretty darn good. Now, your cholesterol is like your oil. If you make it too thick, you got a problem, you know, but when you bring that LDL cholesterol down as a target, it's just for the people. I think it does bring down inflammation with it. And in the past, years ago, I mean, I can remember here, Christus Santa Rosa and Baptist and hospitals here, we used to have cholesterols, told people, hey, look, you know, 20 years ago, your cholesterol's 250, you're okay. Not anymore. We found out we measured Americans, and Americans aren't the norm. We're a high-risk bunch of folks. If you want to go where there's not much atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries or stiff vessels, then you'll find that it's much lower than that. It probably runs in the neighborhood of maybe 50 to 70 for most people. So we have a very high-risk environment here because of diabetes, which aggravates this problem.
So you just said you want people to exercise a couple of hours a day? So, because typically the recommendation is if you can exercise, you know, 30 minutes a day, three times a week, then that's all you really need.
May be the minimum. It's kind of like you exercise as much as you love yourself, in a sense. You want the best results? Look at the person who's physically fit, and those guys usually exercise. They'll go to the gym, they'll spend an hour or so getting ready, and then they'll exercise probably for 30 to 45 minutes, but not less than 30. And it's not sitting here watching somebody else exercise, as some of my house staff love to do. Oh, yeah, watch this guy play basketball. That doesn't count. You got to get up and sweat for 30 minutes. To sweat, you have to work out for a while before you start sweating. If you sweat right off, then you're pretty out of shape.
So are we looking towards just getting the blood pumping, getting your elevated heart rate elevated, or are metabolic effects of exercise?
The metabolic effects of exercise will increase your heart rate and your blood pressure for those short terms, but the most powerful part is it's anti-inflammatory. Because what you're doing is the body has its own internal ability to produce its anti-inflammatories. And that will help actually decrease a lot of the actual inflammatory signals that are going out that are bad from cholesterol, or maybe you didn't work out or you ate bad or whatever. That is your antioxidant is protecting you. How powerful is the body's antioxidant? It's amazingly powerful. 1 million times better than a bottle of vitamin E. You just have to exercise for a short time and you'll have tremendous results. But people don't exercise. So you, over time, and you look at why we lowered these guidelines and start earlier, is we want everybody to get used to starting to train earlier and do primary prevention. If you want your children to live a long time, you better get them exercising early, because they won't live a full life. This is our first year, the United States' first year, that you live less length of time here. Only country in the world. We lost our actual healthy benefit because we are not as healthy as we used to be. That's why I say we really, in San Antonio, we have kind of a double-edged sword, too. We have added genetics for diabetes, and we also have this cholesterol problem. The cholesterol problem in diabetes is not as pretty. If you have diabetes and you have cholesterol, whatever level that is, to a person that doesn't have diabetes, you just amplified your risk two or three times.
Risk for?
For heart disease, heart attacks, and strokes.
Let me go to Noah on the phones, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Noah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. So I got a simple pimple question. So I'm a plumber, and we drive around quite often, and some of us have families to where we don't really have free time to go exercise. And then at that, we eat a lot of unhealthy food. So I was wondering, are there places that you would recommend over others? So like a Subway over a Potbelly's, or like, do you have recommendations for us to go to places to where they're unhealthy, but, you know, a little bit more healthy? Does that make sense?
All right, yeah. Noah, thank you for the call, Noah. So go ahead and what are some good food choices?
Well, you know, clearly everybody's going to say vegetarian. There's a catch. Vegetarian is not protein. You need protein to re-heal the muscles that you break down every single day. So you need to be a smart guy. You need to, again, balance your carbs and your protein. I'm not a food expert, but I can tell you at the gym, everybody takes protein in. But if you just took protein without all the other vegetables and things like that, you're losing your vitamins that are coming in, though, naturally. Now, you are a plumber, so you exercise by your work type. So in a sense, you are exercising, and so you may not have time to go to the gym, but I'll bet you if you're like the plumber that comes to my place, you guys are pretty fit, and you do carry heavy objects and things. So you are somewhat protected because you're exercising, but you're also in an area that's more prone to bacteria and stuff like that. So for you, staying really healthy and decreasing your inflammation risk, because it's all these bugs around you. But all of us have bugs, but you are a little bit special case. So as a doc, I would look at what you do. Where would you eat? I'd probably eat at a salad bar, or have a salad with some maybe chicken that's not fried. If you want to fry it, it's good for my business. I do interventional cardiology. So what would that be? Because what you're doing is you're giving me saturated fat. That is not metabolizing well, and that actually will raise your cholesterol. But you can only raise it again about 10 to 20% from your diet. But it's telling me your habits are bad. So overall, it would be better that you eat something like that. I don't think I have to tell you, probably on there, it's not a lot of the Hispanic foods. I know the guys love Hispanic foods, but guys, be careful how much saturated fat's in there. You need to have an idea of what you're eating.
So the bad cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, it comes a lot from high protein saturated fats like fatty red meat, processed meats like bacon, sausage, hot dogs, deli meats.
Well, some of it does, Dave. I mean, I think that the LDL cholesterol doesn't necessarily come from if you ate a steak, reasonable portion size, and then a chicken, that's about. But if you told me you fried it, There's where your cholesterol is coming from. The thing that's going to hurt you is how they did it. It's not necessarily the meat itself. It's that what you did to the meat that makes it damaging. Let me give you a salad.
So the fried Twinkie is the fried part.
It's the fried part. You can have the Twinkie without the fry. But, you know, it's very – it's interesting. People know. It's not that you don't know. You guys all know. If you eat, for example, a hamburger and it's, you know, and it's not freezing grease or stuff, but it won't taste quite as good. It doesn't have quite – frying and putting that stuff on the food does taste good. You can take a salad and put on some sauce and it will exceed the chicken breast you could have eaten. You got to be smart players. I mean, your mom's not there watching you anymore, so you're going to
have
to
take – Well, your mom probably taught you to eat fatty – foods, right?
No, my mom gave me a Coke. So,
Cokes will get you diabetes.
There you go. So, I think it's a great comment, and I'm really glad you asked the question. And the work you do, actually, a guy that is a machinist or somebody who actually works a lot heavy, or maybe a guy building a house, that's not the same cowboy that's a bank president who bring all this fancy food in, but it's fried. That guy's super high risk.
Let's go to Sean on the phones. And Sean, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yes, I think this is very important to talk about cholesterol as somebody who has high cholesterol, even though I work out, more than an hour a day, plus going on an 8-mile run every weekend. But I just think that we're missing the bigger point, and we're forgetting that if everybody is sick in the United States, then it's not an individual issue. It's an entire structural problem. If the entire culture is eating bad, then it's everybody eating bad. In Europe, they get 3 times as many steps as us, not because everyone's individually thinking about it, just because society is structured in a way that they walk out the door and they get 3 times as many steps as us. And so I appreciate all of the information, but those are not going to fix the larger systemic problem that we have, that we are just in a structurally designed place that makes us all sick uniformly. Thank you.
All right, Sean, thank you for that. We have a built environment that doesn't really allow for a lot of walking and a sad diet. Standard American diet is also – so is this not – to put this on individuals, but we've been put into, as you say, a cage where it kind of brings about these conditions that are not good.
Yeah, you know, his comment, it's interesting too. This – I would suspect – if he runs 8 miles, he is not the typical patient. This just to listen to his comments, he's right on target. But he took it upon himself to exercise and take care of himself. So he falls out as the routine cowboy. I mean, I think most of us who would do that kind of work, this guy sounds great. I bet he has really good numbers. His cholesterol probably is genetically high. And he can take a statin and lower that. But the thing that he does that protects him is, Granny's cholesterol's up a little bit, but at the same time, he exercises and decreases inflammatory risk because he is really bringing down the things that really add to the danger of the high cholesterol. So he's just an exceptionally good guy.
So that goes to the point that you had earlier. I mean, we're talking about this cholesterol number, fixating on it, almost fetishizing that number, but there's so many other factors in play. So if you're, I guess, taking care of your teeth, you know.
That is a big one. No, Dave, you're exactly right. If you don't see the dentist and have your teeth cleaned, you are making a huge mistake. The Health Science Center has a dental school, probably number one in the United States. It's superb. They've done studies there. They can show you in gums that are infected, starting to go along with diabetes, those guys have increased risks. And that risk goes with the HSCRP, this high-sensitive troponin assay that you give to actually measure inflammation. It's associated with, again, something simple like that. So I think it's an important one.
Right. And as long as – and everything else, I mean, so he exercises – sounds like he wants to take care of himself. He does have that elevated number, but that number is probably something that's indicative of genetics. He may have a statin prescribed to him. And we can talk more about that when we come back from the break. We've got some other callers on the board. We'll get them on the air when we come back. We're talking about cholesterol, healthy living. How does it add to your what your lifespan is going to be like, and not just your lifespan, but your health span. You want to be able to be healthy longer in life. So we're finding more about that and these new guidelines when it comes to cholesterol. When we come back, I want to dig into statins. What are they? How do they work? And why is that the pill that they prescribe so often? And you can call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With us in the studio today, Dr. Robert Chilton, a clinical professor of medicine and interventional cardiologist at UT Health San Antonio. We're talking about new guidelines for cholesterol and healthy living. And you can give us a call with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. And let's go straight to AJ. AJ, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call. So I've got a question. Actually, it's two. Okay. But my first question is, how big of a factor is stress as far as lowering cholesterol and issues with the heart? And then the other thing is that it's interesting that there are blue zones throughout the world where people live over 100 years old. And there are a bunch of different factors, but one of them was the exercise that they get. Most of these villages where these people live are in mountainous terrain. So they go to the grocery store, they go down the hill, up the hill, and they will do this several times a day. And also that they are surrounded by a social activity. We have friends that they rely on and that they engage daily besides diet. So those are my questions. Thank you.
All right, AJ. So what about stress, cortisol, stress?
Okay, you're absolutely right, AJ, on your comments about stress. One-third of people having heart attacks have a fight with their spouse within 24 hours. That's stress. If you look at all of our guidelines, we're going to tell you to decrease your stress. Everybody kind of blows that off, but it is a big deal. Stress raises your blood pressure, which is a risk factor. Doesn't change your cholesterol much, but it can take your and change your circadian rhythm.
So
brain.
What are they fighting about that gives them a heart attack? Is the wife stress. Telling them go to the doctor?
Oh, it's hard to tell. It could be different things. Probably shouldn't go into what they fight. But
anyway, there's a fight. They're having a knockdown, drag-out fight.
They have a very stressful event. Maybe it's a daughter who didn't get into a school or something, you know, or it costs too
okay.
much, whoever. But that stress raises in your blood a chemical to raise your blood pressure. That chemical also has effects on your blood. It affects your blood vessel wall. It just really stresses you out. And at the corner of plaques that you guys rupture, there are little bitty areas that release histamine. You guys take antihistamines for things. Well, they can actually crack that plaque. And that's stress-related, and it comes from the head. Those are things that you can see or you can hear that just drive you crazy. They're not causing damage to your body as much as they're things that you think are really critical, and your body recognizes that as a stressful thing, and then it goes through whatever chemicals it puts out. It does put out cortisol, as you mentioned, when you get stressed, but along with the cortisol comes out noradrenaline, epinephrine, things like some compounds like that. And that raises your pressure and raises your heart rate. And during that period of time, it changes the wave physics that you go down a blood vessel wall. Normally, you would have a nice smooth upstream to your pressure or heart rate. But what if it went up straight up real quick? Well, it could tear a plaque or something that's kind of loose that's not really locked down well, or some cholesterol plaquing that's in there. So that stress is important. Now, to the blue zone. Your blue zone is people who actually eat healthy, exercise, and low stress.
So these are areas where people tend to live over 100.
Yeah, they are. And with that comes some tremendous advantages because during that period of time, these guys, if you watch what they eat, yes, they eat a little bit healthier than us, but they exercise, as you pointed out. When you exercise, you will pump blood through your microcirculation. With that, you also pump through with it antioxidants that are in your blood that are protective for you. And those actually are very protective. And if you actually continue to do that all day long. Now, of course, Dave and I and all of us here, we work at stressful jobs at different times. Things are stressful. Well, that stress adds to it. So you have to take the sum total. Blue zone is I think it would be great if I lived in that and I could decrease the stress like that. But most of us aren't in the blue zone.
We can't all live in a Greek island.
Yeah, no, I and have wine every day. Well, we could talk about wine another day. But wine is an antioxidant, a very powerful one. So I think these food substances are important. So it's healthy eating, stress or mind control, or going to church and actually kind of relaxing and getting your life organized is an important deal. But the blue zones offer many things. You probably aren't going to find, you know, Caesar dressing too much in the blue zone.
Right. Real quickly, because I got a lot of calls here, but I want to cover statins. So a statin is a inhibits the creation of cholesterol in the liver. Mm-hmm. So, because most of the cholesterol you have in your body created. And so some people just have a factory in their liver that's just pumping it out. So this enzyme being blocked and now it goes lower. And any side effects from statins?
Well, you know, if you take a look at the actual national registries, like 140 million people, we may have 6 or 10 people. However, we have other people who clearly have statin intolerance. They can't take it. When we have done studies—
causes muscle damage and things like that.
Yeah, you got achy muscles or this or whatever, and we have other drugs that we can give now that will bring down your cholesterol. But you're just targeting cholesterol with a statin. But that's not what I'm looking at. I'm looking at its anti-inflammatory potency. The more powerful that statin, the more it blocks oxidative stress that's being produced in your body. And if you were to measure inflammatory signals and they were high, I will bring that down lower than your LDL cholesterol in the same patient.
So shouldn't we all be on a statin then?
Well, in a sudden, if it has no side effects, that would be great. The problem is there are side effects to every drug you take. But in general, I think most of us, when you hit around 35 or 40, you probably ought to be really looking at your LDL cholesterol. Now, there's a catch. This is San Antonio, so let's make it more San Antonio-based. If you have a genetic history, you're connected with diabetes, the number that you read is, so let's say your LDL is 100. That's not the same 100 as if I did not have diabetes in my genes. Because you may be fooled, that number that you measure may be concentrated different type of cholesterol, and that it triples your heart attack rate. So for that, you need to have a little bit more sophisticated readings from your doctor to look. But if you have diabetes, the number of 100 is not good enough for you. You're going to have to be down in the 70 range.
So San Antonio, where we just had our festival of cholesterol on a stick, you know, yep. So do we just have, you know, we have the genetic going on here and also our lifestyles. Mm-hmm. So we got to really pay attention to this locally.
Yeah, you do. It much more than anywhere else. Those genes transmit to your offspring, too. If the mom and dad had diabetes, that offspring, the chance of them not having diabetes, it's really low. They're going to get it. It's just a matter of when. It's like, I think everybody says they're 55, 60 years old, you're not going to get high blood pressure and it's perfectly normal. That's not what the numbers show. At 95% of you will get high blood pressure before you die. Mm. These are risk factors that we know are things. And if you add the inflammatory arm to it, now just magnify it.
Let's go to Dave on the calls. And Dave, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Dave. I'm actually a colleague at UTL. So I'm one of those that you're talking about. The gentleman who is pre-diabetic, high cholesterol, has the high lipids from a familial source. And I'm going to ask you about GLPs. So I was in the original Ozempic trials and have been on these for many years. And I can tell you it has made a remarkable difference, not just from weight loss. That's only part of the equation. But the things you're talking about, inflammatory markers, my cholesterol went in the dirt. It has changed my fatty liver disease. So please talk a little bit about GLPs other than weight loss and about its protective effects for cardiac and stroke risk reduction.
All right, Dave, thank you for that great call. Appreciate it. So, doctor?
Yeah, let me try to stay within topic range, but your comments, well, it's really an important one. The weight loss is absolutely critical. You will absolutely improve everything. And for you, the GLP-1, yes, does it change your cholesterol? Not much. The thing that changed your cholesterol, improved you, is you decreased your inflammation and you lost your weight and your blood pressure came down. Your heart rate matured. Your actual brain signals from circadian rhythm improved. There's a lot of great benefits from GLP-1, but for some of us, if you don't have much weight to lose, I can't do much with that drug. I would really look skinny. But I think that going with the obesity problem that goes in here, at the same time, the cholesterol's high, that fits with metabolic syndrome, or where you have diabetes people that actually have excess weight. Now, that LDL cholesterol may look normal, but if you look at your triglycerides, that's free fatty acids to a large extent. Those aren't normal, and they are atherogenic too. Although that is only addressed in the guidelines, the new guidelines, because now we put a new one in that says, take your total cholesterol, subtract your HDL, and you need to be less than 100. Your total cholesterol from the good HDL, you need to be less than 100. Rarely are you less than 100. Everything that's left over is atherogenic.
I don't know what that means.
Atherogenic? So you basically have buildup of fat in your artery, and it's clogging your vessels.
Not good.
Well, it depends. That's right. I get it if you get it. Yeah. But I think this is such a hot area of topic because I think people have always just gone for the LDL number. If you want the better number, take the total cholesterol and subtract your HDL. You should be less than 100. And if you really want it, you should be less than 85. But just for general purposes, you take it less than 100. That's a tough one.
All right, we're going to get Robbie on the air with Robbie's question when we come back from the break. And we're going to continue our discussion with the new cholesterol guidelines about heart health, how to take care of yourself. We got to get back to these guidelines with Dr. Robert Chilton, clinical professor of medicine and interventional cardiologist at UT Health San Antonio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Let's get Robbie on the air. And Robbie, you're on the air with Dr. Robert Chilton, clinical professor of medicine, interventional cardiologist, UT Health San Antonio. Go ahead, Robbie.
Okay. Hi. Thank you for my call. Okay. My question is, I have a family history of high cholesterol as well as diabetes on my maternal side. But I'm about 40 years old. I do have high blood pressure. But I'm relatively, like, I'm about 5'9", weigh 150 pounds, and I don't have any issues with cholesterol or diabetes, but my diet is not good. Is it something to do with my weight?
All right, Robbie, thank you for that. We can't, you know, actually treat you or prescribe for you on the over the air, but, you know, in theory, let's talk about what that may look like.
Yeah, just at your numbers you just gave me for your BMI, you're going to be high. So, you know, you may not have problems right now, but the problem is these new guidelines that we have on lipids are starting earlier because of guys that are falling into your category. You look good, your numbers look fine, but you're morphic logically. You're looking at somebody that's really, you know, your weight in high school is usually, unless you were heavier in high school, but that weight is a critical player because your fat cells are giving you the problem. Those fat cells release free fatty acids, but they're your friends up to a point. But if you overload them and you have a genetic predisposition for having trouble in the family with the lipids and stuff like that, then they will spill out in your blood and they will go to other organs. So you need to exercise just like we talked about.
Another caller, Daniel, Melissa. We're going to Melissa now. Melissa, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Melissa. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I do not have any diabetes in my family. My mother passed away at 99. She had high cholesterol. My cholesterol levels were high. Mm-hmm. When my PCP said they wanted to start me on a statin, I was like, oh, what else can I do? I eat really healthy. I haven't eaten red meat for like 30 years, exercise, all of that. So she said that I could start taking red yeast rice, which is a Chinese herbal supplement. She goes, I don't have a lot of research on it, but a lot of my patients have lowered their levels. So I said, let me start that. So after about 5 months, it dropped. All my levels, lipids dropped by 45%. And after a year, all my levels were in the normal range, cholesterol, triglycerides, everything. within the normal range. What do you know about red yeast rice supplement?
All right. And okay, Melissa, well, thank you for that. Red yeast rice. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've never heard of that. What is that, and how does it taste?
Okay, red yeast rice I think is way overpriced. Okay, I think if you took a small statin pill and you busted it in a bunch of pieces and threw it in your rice, it would be a heck of a lot cheaper and you'll get the same effect. The red yeast rice carries statin-like activity, but it's extremely low level. So that means you're quite sensitive to statins. So you may not need to take too much of a statin to keep you in range. Now, I assume as you get older, you will also find that your estrogen effects will be missing. When that occurs, you will shift your lipid profiles. So you're going to have to watch that and see. But quite honestly, if your mom, your best risk factor protection was your mom. You picked the right mom because she lived to be 100. You live to be 100 or close to 100, you got to have some really good genes. So if I was to look at your genetic profile, you probably have very low inflammatory risk, and you probably also have pretty low numbers on your lipids. But remember, during the estrogen years where you're in childbearing age, there's almost nothing that affects as far as heart disease because estrogen trumps everything I have. It is so powerful. But you cannot use estrogen in the Y chromosome because it doesn't recognize. It's only recognized for the X chromosomes. Okay? So guys that say, well, you know, I could take that estrogen and it would help me, I'm a man. No, it won't. It doesn't work that way. So but the red yeast rice, yes, you can pay for it if you like. It does. And if you get your numbers and your LDL is less than 70, you're probably in good shape, you know. But again, you have kind of a special deal. Your mom, your family member lived to nearly 100. You got great genetics. That's fantastic.
Another caller, Daniel. And Daniel, you're on the air now. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Just a quick question. And I don't mean to be so cynical, but you know, these GLP-1s, how they've blown up over the last couple of years. Isn't it at a certain point people, because I understand that there was a problem where when they blew up, not the people that really needed them had access to them until the drug companies caught up. But is it incumbent upon a person to just take some responsibility themselves, and once they lose the weight, get off of them, or maybe even just dig in deep and take? I know not everybody can do that, but I mean it just seems like it's become too easy. Instead of getting out and putting some effort into it, for whatever reason, and I've been one of those people too myself, but to just put some effort in it instead of depending on a pill or a shot. I mean, again, not to be too cynical,
sure.
but
nah.
All right, Daniel, point taken. We get it. Some people will see taking these drugs, weight loss drugs, as a cheat code. But what do you think, doctor?
Yeah, you know, guy, he expresses many people's comments. I think if you can do that, that's fine. But I can tell you when people stop taking the drug, they 80% return to the weight they had. We spent in the Look Ahead trial millions. You paid for this. It's our tax dollar. And we put exercise machines in all these people's houses. We had exercise dietitians come out. We could not get people to stay on that same diet. Okay, now, is it weakness in your ability to say no? You know, I ran into a guy at the gym, and I'm now looking at whether or not some of our food supplements may actually make you hungrier. And so,
well, processed food.
So, in that processed food, I mean, these companies make food so it tastes good. Is there something in there that makes people not be able to do what he suggests? Is it, I can get off the drug after I lost my weight? It makes it drives you back to that weight. I don't know. But I don't think willpower is the entire answer, although at one time I thought maybe that was the case. But I've got some pretty tough guys I do exercise with, and man, these guys got willpower, and they still take the drug because they can't keep the weight off. And it does keep their weight off, and that's really important.
And that's the most important thing. If it works, if it makes people healthy, it extends their life and allows them to continue to be around their family members. I mean, why not?
Yeah. Well, I think that's very true, but there's nothing free. your body is getting a much higher dose of GLP-1. You make GLP-1, so you understand. You make it already. So I know it's not bad. But if you bring a hormone and you raise it that high level, I would like for you to get off in time and go back so your body recycles back to its normal level. Because you worry long term, you don't know. And right. We do not have statin data.
Because it makes you feel full, and yeah. So you don't eat. Mm-hmm. And so once you get off, maybe your body is no longer able to make that determination on its own.
Well, it could be. And maybe the food we have has substances in there that make us more hungry.
Now, it's called hyper-delicious.
At the same time, when you fry something that tastes good, you know, I mean, that's just part of life. But I don't think we have the full answer to it, but I understand what your comment would be. Yeah.
I'm going to get one last caller in here. Patty. Patty, you're on the air. Go ahead, Patty.
Yes, I kind of want to comment on the GLP because I think it's very frustrating because women, like you said, they go through menopause. It becomes very difficult to lose weight. And doctors don't have any answers for us. You know, we talk amongst each other and there's never an answer and we're trying everything. I was walking 5 miles a day, 7 days a week, eating healthy. Nothing would come off.
Yeah.
So I started taking the GLP and yeah, I lost 62 pounds in like 7 months. I feel great. I'm where I'm supposed to be. I'm not obese anymore. I'm in normal. My inflammation's all down. My cholesterol, He said, thinks that mine's probably hereditary. It's not even that high, but he thinks because I've lost all this weight, it's probably hereditary, but it's frustrating because nobody helps you try to lose weight to get healthy. And I think, like you say, there's stuff in the food, all these pesticides and things that, you know, aren't helping us. And so we want to lose weight, but you try so hard and nothing happens.
Yeah,
Patty, thank you for your call. And I appreciate you telling us your truth. That's cool. Thank you.
Yeah, that was good.
So, doctor?
I could not agree with her more. I have family members who take GLP-1. The weight loss is the most important because it decreases events. The SELECT trial we did in non-diabetes people, and we decreased actual heart, non-STEMIs or heart attacks. So it definitely works. That weight excess is bad. But I don't know the answer. And she's exactly right. If you ask around, hey, you know, what could work? How the doctors help me with this? I don't think the doctors do any better than the public does with it.
Well, not social media. You know, so much disinformation. So can you tell me about don't get your medical advice from an influencer on social media.
Yeah. You know, marketing is great. You know, you guys all get marketed. You be careful what Kool-Aid you pick. You know, and I get so much advice from people saying, oh, I looked it up on the internet. Well, tell me what you have. And then you show them a research paper and say, this is what we have to have to a standard of care for a doctor. You need to know this study and make sure it's balanced. They don't get that on social media. Somebody says something and everybody goes ballistic. It's like, what was a mushroom tea?
Coconut oil.
Yeah.
Okay. So you wanted to talk, you mentioned it during the break. Coconut oil, stay away from coconut oil.
You can have coconut oil. Look it up yourself on a legitimate website and see, is coconut bad for you? Coconut oil, what does it do to your actual cholesterol levels? Well, it went the wrong way. It's a saturated fat.
So not a health pill.
But it's not something that I went, now, where did that come from? Well, you can market that because if you got a coconut plantation and you need to sell your coconuts.
Right.
But I think you as a human, you are responsible for a lot of this yourself. You need to be aware of what's going on. And I would definitely suggest that you look at reputable sizes.
All right. Well, real quickly, what is the number one question you want patients to ask their doctors about their cholesterol?
I'd like him to ask, what is my LDL cholesterol? I want the panel. I want the whole panel. Don't give me one number.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
So Dr. Robert Chilton, he is clinical professor of medicine and interventional cardiologist at UT Health San Antonio. We're going to have you back again and talking about your cholesterol, your heart health, living longer, and go get your teeth checked. That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.